You're listening to Otto D, coming at you live.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Otto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from high above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Dagnolo. And this evening, my guest is LA-based singer-songwriter Heidi Webster, whose most recent achievements include an original song written for the 20th Century Fox Searchlight film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, sung by actress Jessica Chastain, who just this week won the Best Actress Oscar for her role in the film. And that's not all, but you'll have to wait to hear the rest from Heidi when she comes on the show, and she'll be joining me right after I share this song of hers called Writing on the Wall here on the Otto D Show. Check it out.
Live.
And that was Writing on the Wall by Heidi Webster here in the Otto D Show, which is brought to you in part by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by TheRecordingArtist.com, where every Wednesday evening I record bands live online while you watch. You can even participate via live chat if you want to. To learn more, visit TheRecordingArtist.com and be sure to check out our companion show on Amazon Prime called The Recording Artist. It's kind of cool. And now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show singer-songwriter Heidi Webster. How are you doing, Heidi?
Hi, Otto. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. And you're calling from L.A., I believe.
Yes, calling in from good old Hollywood, California.
You know, I was just there on Wednesday, just overnight and gone again. So the weather was absolutely perfect.
Oh, it's so good right now. In fact, yesterday, completely out of the blue, it was just pouring down rain, and we were loving it. We just love a good rainy day here. We don't get them that often. So well,
I think it made its way here because that's what we were seeing today.
Oh, yeah. Trickled down.
And you know, Saturday was 96 degrees, and today we were in the 70s, and so it's amazing the difference. You know, it changes so
well
fast.
Arizona definitely needs a cool down.
That's true. In fact, since you mentioned that, you have an Arizona background.
That's right. I am an Arizonian. What do we call ourselves? An Arizonian? I think that's right. I'm obviously a bad Arizonian if I don't know, but born and raised in Arizona.
That's
born
cool.
In Tucson, raised in Phoenix. So yeah, I will never be able to handle the heat as an adult like I did as a kid. I don't know how I did it, but I go back to visit my family and I'm like, wow, I forgot how hot it is here.
That's funny. Well, how old were you when you left Tucson?
Let's see. I was born in Tucson, and I think we were only there while I was just like 1 and 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then was pretty much in Phoenix my whole entire childhood. And I left Phoenix when I was like 17, and I was like bound and determined to get out of Arizona, like, you know, the hometown, like, get me out of here.
Right.
So I left when I was 17, and I didn't come back until I think I was almost 30, and I kind of did a career pivot and came back to Arizona, and I realized how cool Arizona was. Everyone was like, Arizona is where it's at. I have friends that were like, Arizona is the coolest city ever. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's my hometown. Like, it's not cool. And they're like, no, it is. And then I lived there again for a few years in my early 30s. And I my mind was changed. I was like, you know what? Arizona is cool. It's cool. I need to learn to embrace it and love it.
You know, I've lived in a few places, but now the thing that I find about Arizona living in Scottsdale is that when I come home, it used to be I didn't feel like I was home until I closed the door, dropped the bags, and leaned up against the door and said, phew, I'm home.
Mm.
But in Arizona, when the plane's flying into Sky Harbor and I see the city, I have that same feeling like, oh, I'm home. And the rest of the travel back home doesn't matter. It's like I've already made it. So that's a different feeling. Kind of makes it feel like
It's a good place. Good restaurants, too. They really upped their game in the last 10 years.
Yeah, they really have. But speaking of restaurants, you're in West Hollywood, so come on. You're eating good.
I know. I'm spoiled. I'm spoiled here.
And you mentioned you get back to see family once in a while. What kind of family do you have here? Are you lots of brothers and sisters or just your parents or what you got going on?
I have, my parents live in Litchfield Park. They moved out of my childhood home, which was in Peoria. And now they're in Litchfield Park, and I have a sister who also lives in Litchfield Park. Got a couple other siblings that are spread out across the country, but Arizona is very much home to many of my childhood friends. Some are in the East Valley. Now, what part of Arizona do you live? You said you're in Scottsdale?
Yeah, I'm up in Scottsdale, and I came to the Valley in 89 and lived mostly in Ahwatukee.
Oh, that's great. Scottsdale is really where it's at. And when I was doing my master's program at ASU, I was living in right on the border of Scottsdale and Tempe. And it was just the time of my life. Like Tempe, Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, those are just the coolest areas.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Hey, listen, did you get into music when you were little? Or because it sounds like maybe you got into music later. I'm just looking at your bio and
I did music as a young kid. I was always, it was kind of a family rule in our family, in the Webster family, that everyone had to play the piano. Like we all had to take lessons.
That's cool.
It was like a requirement. We had to do it. We didn't want to, but I look back and I was so grateful.
Yeah,
that
nobody wants
no one wants to practice, but it gets harder when you're an adult to learn something. So I played the piano and I was really into singing at a really young age, like 5 or 6. I remember singing and kind of like writing songs. And my earliest memories, I was penciling down notes, on like staff paper. I don't know how I did it. My mom said I was kind of strange that way, that I just had kind of a knack for piano and for writing. And I really, really made it my focus all through school, all through high school, all through college, and really my world was pulled into two different directions. I really loved performing, and I loved writing. So mm-hmm. I kind of kept my toe in two different things, always writing original music, but I loved the stage too, and I loved singing, and I did choir and theater when I was in high school. And I was really lucky at Cactus High School. We just had a really robust choir and theater program, like the best in the state. And I was really, really lucky to have some amazing opportunities there that just propelled me to, you know, want to make a career out of it somehow, some way, you know, really inspiring teachers.
So when you mentioned that you were just, as a youngster, dead set on getting out of Arizona, did you go from here to Hollywood?
You know, no, I didn't. I ended up going to school. I studied music in school, media music, actually, where I just went straight to college. And it was after college that I kind of took a big hiatus with performing, and I sang on cruise ships for a few years as a lead singer for Holland America. And I was like, this is the time of my life. Like my early 20s, I took off. Someone, you know, they hired me to sing on stage in front of people, and I was touring around the Mediterranean. So I did that for a long time, and then lived in New York for a while with pursuing Broadway. And
wow.
Then that was during the recession, actually, when I moved to New York and 11 Broadway shows closed.
Wow.
And it was like, I seriously, like the exact week that there was the financial crash happened, all the shows closed. And the whole time that I was in New York, people were just trying to get by. So I ended up getting hired to sing at Tokyo Disneyland. So I left New York, I went to Tokyo, and I sang there for a while. And after all these years of performing and touring and traveling, I thought I would take a break from it. And I went back to ASU and got a master's in music therapy, and did kind of turned my musical abilities into something totally different, which was like more of a healthy kind of a using music to help others in hospice care. Such a crazy, like, side road in mm-hmm. my career mm-hmm. that lasted quite a while, and then ventured back to performing and moved to Vegas and performed in some shows on the Strip, including Showstoppers at the Wynn. Started my own performing group with a few ladies. We did a female Rat Pack group called Lady Luck. Then, after all of that, I finally moved to LA and got back to my songwriting roots in 2017, and ever since I've been here, really, really diving deep and pursuing that. So I've kind of had this mishmash of a career path.
Which, of course, you know, you draw on it all, but you just ran through a list that's kind of like, we could probably spend, I like to talk, we could probably spend an hour on each of these, the cruise life. Even though you were in New York City at a bad time, what a story to tell. I want to know how hard that was, what you tried, where you tried to get the work, and what you were seeing. You went to Tokyo after that, in Disney. That's a whole story we're going to talk about. You went back to school, and we start talking about music therapy. That's a whole other thing. Then you end up in Vegas, but not just in Vegas, in Showstoppers. So, and that's not even your career, which is LA, writing hit songs and massive movies, winning Oscars. So we'll get to that stuff. That doesn't
nice
matter.
Stuff, Otto. You remembered every bullet point.
Well, every single one of them made me a bunch of questions came up. So the cruise life, that's pretty strange. You were pretty young, though, so it was probably fun while you were doing it.
So fun. Okay. It was so fun. It was just, you
would
know,
you
when
do
you're
that
a young person,
would you do that again?
See the world. What's that?
Would you do that again?
You know, it's funny you ask. After Showstoppers, I started this group called Lady Luck with some friends of mine, and we ended up becoming, you know, this little female Rat Pack group, toured around throughout the nation, but we also ended up doing some guest entertainer work on cruise ships again. So mm-hmm. this was right before the pandemic. We did some cruises, and I thought, oh my gosh, how fun to be back on a cruise, but in a different manner, where instead of living on the ship, I visited for a week as a guest act. And oh, let me tell you, it's a much better gig as a guest entertainer. You get a really nice cabin. You're like a guest there instead of an employee, which is just a huge highlight. So, but yeah, it's a different world now with cruises because of the pandemic. So there's a chance I may go back again sometime with some friends and do another show, but maybe sometime in the future.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild. And then in New York, you know, I bet when you went to New York, you must have thought, you know what, I'm not going to do the performance thing. I'm going to do Broadway. I'm going to take my musical theater and I'm going to do that. So that had to be pretty interesting.
It was really, really cool to be a young person and be in the city. And I think, you know, looking back on the recession, I think it didn't really hit me or get me down like maybe it would as an older person.
Right.
I just remember realizing, oh, there needs to be some kind of a pivot here. And so, you know, I really just spent the time working on my craft and taking classes. But, you know, all the people who were working on Broadway were now out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to get up at like 5 a.m, maybe earlier, and you had to go stand in line outside of like the Actors Equity buildings or these different audition buildings, just with your coat on in the snow, with your music book in hand, standing outside with lines around the block, seeing other famous Broadway actors like there as well. And I'm like, I'm never going to get seen. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So it was a wild time, but truly a great memory in my life.
And how many years were you there?
I was in New York for 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. It's no place like it. So that's another great town to eat in, you know, but, in the business, when you're there, if you could make that happen, then it's kind of like you stay with it as long as you can, and then it's over because there's nowhere up from there. That's like the top, you know?
Yeah.
That's
but there's
cool.
a lot for the city to offer mm-hmm. and good restaurants there. So
So now you mentioned going to Tokyo Disney after New York. Had you ever left the country before that?
Yeah. I touring around
through the
cruise
ships,
I spent most of my time in Europe and the Baltic. So I had really done some extensive world travel before then, but I had never lived in a country for an extended period of time. So I was in Tokyo for a year, and that country truly is amazing. It was such a beautiful experience. It was kind of like actually learning two cultures, like the Disney culture and the Japanese culture, and it was a culture shock all the way, but it was a lot of fun. And the thing that's really cool about Japan and the Japanese people are that they really love and revere Disney and Mickey Mouse. Mm-hmm. Like he is just the coolest, and you could be a grown man with a Mickey keychain on your briefcase. They don't care. They love it. So we felt like celebrities, you know, performing over there.
Wow.
So that was a really cool time.
Yeah, I've never been yet to Japan. Everyone I know that goes says you don't want to go out because you'll never come home.
Yeah, you definitely got to put it on your list. It's one of the most beautiful countries in the world, and the people are so incredibly lovely and helpful and kind. And I felt very safe there.
Mm-hmm.
Very safe. I could go running at night alone, and I was like living my best life here in Hollywood. Forget it. I get killed in 2 seconds.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, listen, in living in Japan and in Tokyo, my understanding is, especially when it comes to the performances and schedules, they are down to the second. There's no room, wiggle room at all for scheduling. Did you find that to be true? Or?
Yes, that's exactly right. It was a very strict schedule. We only had a certain amount of days off, very limited. The days off were never together, but the schedule was very grueling in a way, and it was a hard job. Yeah, you had to put in the time, multiple shows a day, always in the park, and they had really strict rules too there. Like if a show got canceled for whatever reason and that, let's say nobody bought tickets to one of the shows, they would say, okay, that we're canceling this show. You still had to be there. You still had to show up. You had to be in the dressing room, be ready. You're on the clock. They're paying you. You got to be there anyway. So it was an interesting work environment for sure, but definitely rewarding. Mm-hmm. I'll say that.
So how would you describe the biggest difference between, you mentioned the Tokyo, culture versus the Disney culture?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Disney culture is its own thing, you know, like learning the kind of the rules and regulations of the park and the things that we aren't allowed to do and not allowed to do, the places that we are allowed to go, not allowed to go, say, and not allowed to say. It was a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. It felt like learning another language and then doing the show in another language as well. So
Wow. It
took twice as long to learn things because we had translators mm-hmm. helping us with everything. And so it was definitely quite a challenge for the brain. But then once you got a hang of it, it was really cool. Like I mentioned earlier, I felt really safe there. And that's because the culture is really respect driven. And that also played into just daily life, like lots of rules, lots of things that you don't think about, like little rules. Like one time I got in trouble for talking on my phone on the bus. Like the bus driver pulled over and told me to get off my phone.
Like a city bus?
Yeah, you couldn't. And I was like, oh, I didn't know. Couldn't talk on the phone. He was like, you got to get off the phone. So like rules that you just don't think of.
That's interesting. Well, listen, before we leave Tokyo, I'm a food fan. And so was it a little bit of shock when you got there in terms of what you were going to be eating primarily, or what do you remember most about eating in Tokyo?
The food.
Mm-hmm.
The food was so incredible. And you'd be surprised, like sushi, what we think of as sushi here in America, like sushi rolls.
Right.
They don't really have a lot of that there. Like I was excited to be like eating sushi rolls every day, mm-hmm. but that wasn't really a thing. They had sushimi. And of course, going to a Japanese market was just the most fun. That to me was like going to Disneyland, you know, trying uh-huh. all the sweets. But if you could go down to, if you could go down to downtown Tokyo or Shibuya and find like these little side streets that had the most fresh fish you could ever have. Like these little slices of yellowfin were like just to die for, like melt in your mouth. It's the best sushi, like sashimi I've ever had in my life. The food was glorious. Definitely a lot of it was really strange. You got to try it all. Some of it, like the red bean, is not my cup of tea when it came to desserts. But the fish, can't beat it.
Cool.
Cannot beat it. Got to go take a trip to the fish market too.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. I can picture it all. I almost taste it. So that's kind of fun. And then you went back to school and got your master's in music therapy. So were you thinking you were getting out of music at that point then? Were you a little bit tired or disillusioned? Or where were you that you decided to go into music therapy?
Yeah, it was such a huge pivot for me.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of tired of the performing career. Like I was tired of updating my headshots and my resumes, and New York, of course, was grueling. And I had the choice to go back to New York. My stuff was there in storage. And I think those couple years from that time during the recession was hard on me. And I think I was thinking, how can I utilize my talents in another way if it's not performing, like what could I do?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even lying to you, Otto. I did a Google search and I'm like, what kind of music careers are out there
mm-hmm.
that could be something that would interest me? I had never heard of music therapy before. And I actually, when I was in New York, I was working to support myself as a nanny, a live-in nanny. And it was really great because it was flexible and I could go to any audition that I wanted. But I worked with a little 2-year-old who we found out later, had like a mild form of autism. And anytime that I worked with him and he was having a fit, I would start singing to him and he would always calm down and just look at me. And I could get him really engaged when I had music happening. And mm-hmm. it was usually just me singing to him. And so when I did this Google search and I found music therapy, I immediately like thought of this young boy that I used to nanny. And I thought, okay, I definitely know in my gut and in my heart and soul that music is powerful. Like, we all connect with music on a personal level, whatever that means to us culturally, even in religion or just our everyday lives in when we exercise. And so I thought, okay, I want to learn more about this. So I flew home to Arizona and I did like a little tour of the music therapy program there to see what it was all about. And I thought, okay, I want to do this. I want to figure out how to use my talents to help people who are in need. And it sounds like the most crazy and random like career. People are always like, what's music therapy? It's been around since, you know, full on since like the 1970s. So I guess it's pretty a fairly new kind of career occupation. Mm-hmm. But people are learning more about it. And it was really, I think, the most life-changing part of my career path to date. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really changed the way that I looked at life, the way that I lived. So like thing I mentioned earlier, I ended up getting a job and working as a music therapist full-time in hospice. And did my internship in Arizona and actually worked in Arizona for a company called Seasons Hospice. They're now called Accent Care. But really, like, the most amazing experiences of my life doing, you know, sitting with people who were spending just their final days, their final moments, and, mm-hmm. and being able to share music with families and people, just really rewarding for me mm-hmm. personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to go back and spin one of your songs and give you a break for a second as I grill you about your life here. And after we play we'll come back and we'll talk about the move to Vegas, and then we'll get on to what you got going on with your production company now, okay? So,
love it. That sounds great.
Before we spin this next tune, tell me a little bit about the song we already played, Writing on the Wall. That's, by the way, your voice is beautiful. The production is incredible. Great record. So tell me, who's making this? Are you doing it all yourself at home?
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to hear it. It's been a long time since I listened to a song of mine, like, full all the way through. So I actually love that song. We just released it at the beginning of 2022 this year. It's a remix a collaboration that I did with Gold Ablaze, who is a fantastic producer, sound designer, mixing and mastering engineer. His name is Brian Sherman. His artist name is Gold Ablaze, and he is here in LA too. And we were introduced by another artist friend of mine. And this song, Writing on the Wall, was originally on my EP, Nightlight, which came out last fall in 2021. And Brian and I had worked on this collab, and I was just so thrilled what he did with the track. It's just so much fun. It immediately reminded me of like beach club vibes. And so mm-hmm. it's one of the most dancey tracks that I have. And I really love what he did with the production on it. So yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
The production and the sound design, seriously. I mean, it's a lot of, you can just tell a lot of unique work is done on the track, and it just sounds great. So kudos to that. Keep working with him. That's a great relationship.
Thank you.
And your voice is beautiful on it. I think your voice is beautiful on all the tracks. That's why I kind of want to get back to play another one. So tell me a little bit about Wander.
Oh, Wander. Okay, great. I am really excited about this one. This is my most recent release that just came out a couple weeks ago. The song was written for an original documentary feature film that just came out called The Last Tourist. This is a documentary that just had its world premiere in Vancouver, the Vancouver Film Festival, and the U.S. premiere at the Santa Barbara Film Festival just a couple weeks ago. And now it's available to stream on Apple iTunes. And it really is a stunning, gorgeous film. I was so honored to be a part of this project. The documentary is really riveting. If you like to travel, if you have traveled, if you want to do more traveling in the future, it's really important, a really important film that talks about how tourism can affect the world's economies and the different countries that you visit. And if you're some of the things that we don't think of that might be affecting the countries negatively. And it's really eye-opening. It's really beautiful, offers really great suggestions on how to improve ourselves as travelers, what we can do. So I was asked to write this original song for the credits, and it's a little different than my normal releases, but I felt like very inspired by the film and was very uplifted. So it has kind of this energetic, kind of driven, uplifting vibe that wants to send people away feeling like they're inspired to make a change.
Very cool. Well, let's check it out. So this is a song called Wander from my guest, Heidi Webster, here on the Otto D Show. And then we'll be right back with Heidi. Check it out. And that was Wander from Heidi Webster here on the Otto D Show. Heidi, another great, great song.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate you playing that one. It means a lot to me, and I really do encourage you and everyone to go check out the film, The Last Tourist, down on Apple iTunes.
That is awesome. And right before we played that, you were talking about the first song, Writing on the Wall. You mentioned that it was originally released on your EP in 2021, which I think was your debut EP as an artist. Was it not your first release, or was it?
That's right. Yeah, I had released a handful of singles in 2020 and throughout 2021. But yeah, fall of 2021 was my debut EP Very excited about that project, and really took, you know, gosh, how long did it take me? Probably a year and a half to get everything put together for that. Maybe, I'm sure artists work much longer on projects, but we were in a pandemic, so.
That's true. It was a focused effort. But you actually ran into or got to work with Keith Olsen.
Yes.
I mean, how lucky was that? I mean, boom.
Oh, man. Let me tell you, meeting and working with Keith Olsen was just one of the highlights of my life. And it really was one of those kind of a kismet fluke type of situations. And I haven't really told many people this story, but I was looking to take a road trip up to visit some friends up north in Sacramento. And I had a girlfriend just jump in the car with me and was like, I want to come. And so we ended up road tripping up all over the place in Northern California. This was in, you know, right when I moved to LA, I think in 2017 or 18. And she said, do you mind if we like veer off and maybe go to Yellowstone and maybe we go up to Tahoe? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And she goes, my dad's friend, who I grew up with, lives in Tahoe. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, we should go visit him. And so I was like, tell me about, you know, your dad. And we were driving, doing this road trip. And she was like, yeah, my dad's friend is Keith Olsen. And I'm like, Keith Olsen, like the music producer from Fleetwood Mac? And she's like, yeah, that's him. I was like, you're kidding me. Like, we're literally going to Keith Olsen's house right now? And she's like, yeah, I just texted him. I told him we're coming. She's not a musician. She didn't really like have this, you know, she grew up with him. So
did she realize that you were a singer at that point?
Yeah, she knew. Okay. I was.
So she knew
was
you
like,
might be.
Oh, you should. She was like, oh, you know what? You should play one of your songs. I was just like so giddy. I couldn't even drive fast enough. I'm like, I can't believe we're going to Keith Olsen's house. And so I tried to play it cool, you know, like I didn't want to, and my experience working in hospice actually really strengthened my question asking abilities. So I just wanted to know all about his life. He told me all about his career and how he got Stevie Nicks started. He just told me the coolest stories. And then like towards the end of our visit, my friend was like, hey, she's a singer and a songwriter too. You should hear her stuff. He was so nice. He took me into his studio and he was like, okay, listen, you can send me one of your songs, but don't send me all of them. Just send me your best one. And I was like, deal. So we developed a friendship and I sent him my songs. We just kind of were pen pals after that via email for months and months and months and even a couple of years. And I would send him my tracks. He would work on them. He would send them back to me. He would amp up the production. He would, you know, EQ, compress things that I wasn't knowledgeable about at the time and kind of taught me the ropes about sound just via email. We were just really good friends and the advice that he gave me and the encouragement that he gave me, I think really, set me up like the beginning of my time here in LA to feel like I could do it.
And I owe
that to him.
Yeah. It's like an accidental mentor. That's fantastic. What a story.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, he has of course passed now and I was very sad to hear that news. And I remember, actually, it's quite wild. I remember we exchanged a couple emails literally just a couple days before he passed away. And he had mentioned in the email that he wasn't feeling well. And he's at all old age, you know. And then I heard he had passed away. And I was pretty devastated to hear that news. Just felt too young. But he had been struggling for a little while there. So I felt like I had this private little kind of friendship going on with one of the coolest guys in the music industry who was just, you know, living out his days in Tahoe, living it up. So it was a really, really cool thing for me.
That's very, very wild. Man, what a cool story. And so we kind of jumped right into LA, and we skipped over Vegas for a second. But a lot of singers dream of going to Vegas and working, and I think a lot of people dream of working in Showstoppers. So you had to be pretty excited about that opportunity when it came up.
Oh, that was also another life-changing moment for me, and that led me to, you know, work and perform with the people that I just so close with today. But yeah, for sure, Showstoppers was the dream show that every person wanted to be a part of, and I didn't know how I got so lucky. And when I first moved to Vegas, I was actually a music therapist still full-time, mm-hmm. and we opened up a new office there. And I had kind of been itching to get back into the performing world after being a music therapist for like 5 years. I thought, you know what, this other part of me, I really miss it. And so I ended up going, requesting to transfer to the new office in Vegas. And when I did, I had a lot of friends who were there performing, and they were encouraging me, oh, you know, you should audition for this or that. And then the audition came up for Showstoppers, and yeah, I did the audition, and my life changed from there. I ended up having to quit music therapy and doing Showstoppers full time, which was really, really amazing. And we actually still do perform for Steve Wynn every now and then for like a party or something that he does. Oh, so cool. we've got a friendship there with him, and he just loves music so much. And he was good to us. We just did a performance for him for New Year's Eve in Florida. So
cool.
It's really fun to be surrounded by people who love music, who can also have the means to support it.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah, it was a good time, and the win was spectacular. Just like I remember when I got the gig, just driving down to the Strip and going backstage and being part of a stage, to me, that felt like it was the Broadway show that I never did. You know, mm-hmm. it was just the most beautiful experience. We had a 30-piece orchestra. There were 30 dancers. There were 6 singers. And the costumes were elaborate. It was like a $15 million show.
Yeah.
And so it looked, it felt, and it was very expensive. And the talent that was on that stage, I felt just in awe to be there. I remember when I first moved to Vegas, a friend of mine took me to see the show. This is when I was still working as a music therapist. And I sat, I think, like on the 5th row, and the curtain came up and the orchestra was playing, and I just got tears in my eyes because it was so beautiful. And I was like, wow, what an amazing production. And if you could have told me sitting there that, hey, one day you're going to be in that, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have been like, no way, what a dream.
Yeah.
So it really was. It was a dream come true.
You know, it's kind of, your life is kind of dream after dream after dream. I mean, a lot of people would have said, gosh, you know, I finally got my chance, and I was in Disney in Tokyo for 2 years. I finally moved to New York, you know, granted it was a bad time. But you've done so much, and Showstoppers in Vegas. And then in L.A., not only did you run into incredible people right off the bat, that like Keith, who became a great mentor, put out your first record. Now you've got a collaborator now who you're doing incredible work with. And besides this, you've started your own production company in L.A. Mm-hmm. And now you're creating songs that are getting placed in films like, as I mentioned in the social media posts promoting this interview, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which I watched Jessica accept the Oscar on TV. And then I talked to you the next day. It's like, it's just hilarious, you know? So how did that feel for you when she sings that song and then you watch her up there receiving the Oscar from the film?
Oh my gosh. You know what? I remember the day that I was on set and I met her and I was watching her sing this song. It was the very last day of filming in North Carolina. I was lucky enough to be invited to set to see it. And I just couldn't even believe my life in that moment. And then to fast forward a year and a half later, let's see, when was that? That was 2019. So 2.5 years later. Oh my gosh. So when I was watching her at the Oscars, it hit me in that moment. I was like, oh my gosh, like, I was there when she, you know, I got to see her film parts of this, and here she is winning Best Actress for this exact role. And it, I think it all hit me in that moment, like, oh my gosh, how special it was that she chose my song and I got to be a part of this thing that, that has seemed to win everybody's hearts. And it felt at the time like a very special project, but it was very interesting to be a part of the behind the scenes and see how things are made and done. And I'm sure every single person puts their heart and soul into a project like this and only hopes and dreams that it could end up with as many nominations as it got, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was a true honor, a true thrill. And yeah, I couldn't believe sitting there watching her accept that speech. I'm like, oh my gosh, she sang my song. Pretty wild.
Yeah, that is, that is very wild. And it's gotta be just a great, great feeling. So what else? I mean, that, like you say, that was 2.5 years ago, and it takes that long for the film to come out and then to make its mark in the marketplace and earn that award. So in the last 2.5 years, you've done some other things that we won't hear about until they win awards. So what else have you got going on? What's floating around out there?
So my time in LA, especially during the pandemic, has been really cool to just hone in on my craft. You know, there's so much amazing music out there, and there's always music needed for sync and licensing. So I really put my focus not only as an artist and a songwriter, but really focusing in the sync and licensing world, because there's so many opportunities to make money if you're not a touring artist, you know? Mm-hmm. So for those listening who don't know sync and licensing, it really is placing music anywhere where there's media. So it could be ads, it could be game, video games, commercials, movies, TV, all of the above. So
and from your
my company. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and from your experience, since you're addressing people who might want to know, what's the best way for them to find access to those points, to those opportunities?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, there's lots of different sync libraries out there that solely exist to work with music supervisors who are placing the music. So a lot of people, there's a lot of different avenues to take, and truly the best one is to find a sync library or a sync agency that can represent your songs and pitch them to studios who have music supervisors working for them. There are sync libraries out there that are very tailored and specific. Maybe one just works for trailer houses and does trailers for movies. I know a lot of sync libraries and agencies that just specifically do ads. In fact, that's where the big money is in the ads. And so if you find yourself a good sync library or a good sync agent, then you can make deals with them and turn your songs over for them to represent in different kinds of contracts. You could have an exclusive agreement. You could have a non-exclusive agreement. Just depends on what you're looking for, but there are lots of opportunities. Some people find that it's the best way is to meet music supervisors, get relationships with them, and network and, you know, pitch your music individually. And that can be a really strong way to do it, but that takes a lot of time and effort. And if you're not in LA, it's hard to do. So sure. There are different conferences that you can attend and different events where you can meet music supervisors. But I highly recommend simultaneously just putting your music in libraries.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that was pretty much my sole focus during the pandemic. And I had some really cool opportunities come up to compose some music for ABC for some different little short films that they did internally, and kind of dipping my toe in film score a little bit. I just recently finished scoring a short film for a director, writer here in Los Angeles that will be probably pitched to festivals next year. So there's lots of cool projects that I'm working on. The release of Wander and the film The Last Tourist and The Eyes of Tammy Faye were kind of like my last big projects, but I'm always writing. I'm always working on briefs for different libraries and music supervisors. So this is kind of the full up-to-speed update on everything that's going on, but it's never a dull moment, that's for sure. It's really cool. Fun. There's lots of creative opportunities.
So what are you going to do in the next couple of years? Are you going to continue to focus on this library pitching concept, or you think you're going to get back out? Because, I mean, right now you're putting out singles, and they sound pretty dang good, so you might have some more opportunities to get out there performing.
Yeah. I've been, you know what, that's a great question. I think one of my goals for the next couple years will be to do more live shows. That's something that I have yet to really dabble in. I set myself a goal last year to do one live show before the end of the year. So I ended up performing one of the songs from my EP and a small set of other songs at Hotel Cafe here in Los Angeles. It's kind of like your rite of passage. Like, mm-hmm. You have to perform at Hotel Cafe if you are a singer-songwriter here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So I did A Sky Full of Stars. It's my Coldplay cover for a Coldplay cover evening at Hotel Cafe. And I had my guitarist, Kenny, and my piano player, Eric, accompany me. And it was really fun. But I'll tell you what, performing my pop music is so different than performing on stage in the shows that I was used to. So it's a really different skill and a really different art. And I think in the next couple of years, it would be really fun to do some more shows, showcase my music. I really love releasing music as an artist as much as I do writing for specific projects. So hopefully, you know, I'll get brave enough and get out there on stage and showcase some of my artist music eventually.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, if people want to find you and find out more about you, what's the simplest way? You have a website, I imagine?
Yeah, you know what? I think the best way to follow along with my projects and what I have going on is on Instagram, and that's at Heidi Webster Music. You can, of course, check out my website, HeidiWebsterMusic.com. HeidiWebster.com. I don't even know my own website. HeidiWebster.com. And yeah, Instagram is really where I am keeping up to date on all my projects and showcasing snippets of songs that I work on. Follow along. So I do a lot of behind the scenes of what I'm working on in the studio, showing how things are recorded and mastered and written. And so, yeah, keep up with me there. And I'm going to have a new single coming out probably early summer. So I'll ping you when it's going to be announced.
Cool. Well, listen, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show tonight. I really, really appreciate it. And congratulations. Yay. On everything you got going on.
Oh, thank you so much, Otto. It's been so fun to talk with you, and I'll definitely need to come and see you next time I come to Arizona. I'll have to come see your studio and come visit you and meet you in person.
Absolutely. And I'm going to play another song on the way out called Gold. This wouldn't happen to be the next single. This is already out, right?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Gold.
Is it okay if we play that next?
Yeah, absolutely. Gold is from my EP, Nightlight, that we mentioned already. Mm-hmm. And actually, this song is special to me because I wrote it in a class that I took for that Ryan Tedder was hosting. He's the lead singer of One Republic, hit songwriter. He was one of the judges on Songland. And he listened to it and reviewed it, and he posted it on his Instagram, and I was definitely freaking out. So this song,
yeah,
this song
described your voice,
because the ears of Ryan Tedder heard it.
And he described your voice as both angelic and killer. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, talk about an amazing moment in life. I was screaming the day that this happened. So
that's very, very cool.
So yeah, I'm happy about it.
All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and spin that, and I guess if you want to hang on, I'll say goodbye afterwards, and if you're gone when the song's over, I'll thank you for being on now. But here's a Gold.
All right.
From Heidi Webster here on The Otto D Show. Check it out.
Everyone's looking for treasure. You find a map, you find a road that leads you nowhere. Looking in empty spaces. You find your soul, you find your worth in other faces. And if you would have known that in a bed of stone, you are the gold flickering in the night through the water, through the water. You are the gold when the light hits the shade, and it's gonna blind you. It's gonna blind you. Everyone's chasing something.
Another awesome song. Very cool.
Thank you so much.
Very cool. So I guess, you know, just I never have repeat guests, so I may not call you to come back on, but I'll stay in touch, keep track of what's happening, and the best of luck.
Yeah,
you got going on.
Oh, thank you so much, Otto. This is so much fun. It was a pleasure to be your guest today.
Well, thanks for coming on, and make sure you let us know if you're going to do a show in Arizona.
Yeah, definitely will. And if you swing by LA anytime, give me a holler. We'll meet up.
I will. You got it. All right. Well, take care, Heidi. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Otto. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And you've been listening to The Otto D Show here on Dave Pratt's Star Worldwide Networks. See you next week.